What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented songwriter and music producer who has demonstrated his creative talents writing and producing for some of the biggest names in the music business, such as Kenny Babyface Edmonds, TLC, Elle DeBarge, and Miss Diana Ross. Please put your hands together and welcome songwriter, music producer, and keyboardist, John John. What's happening, John John?
Hey, what's going on, Spud? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. What's happening?
Nothing much, man. Trying to beat this heat.
Oh, you too, man. Yeah. People don't know, Minneapolis is on fire right now. We are averaging at least
heat
95.
And the cold.
Oh, my God, dude. We are just getting it left and right now. Well, John John, before we get into the interview questions, dude, I got to say this. One of your jams that you've worked on and written and produced for Mr. Elle DeBarge, Can't Get Enough, that's probably one of my favorite jams of all time, dude. So I got to take my hat off to you on that one, brother.
Thank you. That song will always have a special part in my heart because that was basically my introduction into the music industry professionally, where it put me on the scene. So, yeah, that was one of my special songs, most definitely.
Man, how did that collaboration come together, man?
Well, a couple of friends of mine, we had this production crew, and, we used to do writing, all these sorts of things, and so we happened to go to this restaurant. It's an old restaurant back in the early 90s called Larry Parker's, and it was a spot where, young celebrities would hang out and come, eat, open mic, it was just a real fun spot. And so I happened to meet, Kenny there one night, and his brother-in-law at the time, Michael McCorn, said, hey, you have any music you want to share? Just, bring it to me. So I was like, all right.
Right.
I didn't expect that to happen, so wow. I took some music up to him, let him hear the music and everything, and that was one of the tracks that I had on the tape, and Kenny heard the tape, and he was like, I like that record right there. I'm working with Elle DeBarge, and I'm thinking to myself, oh man, he's working with Elle DeBarge, that's one of, I'm a huge Elle DeBarge fan, DeBarge, Twitch, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. So he took the track, did his thing to it, and wrote the lyric and melody to it, and I mean the rest is history. I remember listening to it the first time I heard it on the radio. I ran down the street. It was probably like 2 o'clock in the morning, running down the street yelling. People were coming out their doors trying to see what was going on. It was just a real special moment, man.
Wow, I can imagine, man. Like I said, it just has such a melodic flavor. It sticks in your head all day, and it was just a good thing. Some songs you want out of your head, man, but these are one of the songs where I think every musician is going to be able to pull from and kind of add to their own dynamics and their own writing style and production, man. So, yeah, that you definitely set the mark on that one.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Now, give me some background, John John, on how you actually started in the business. Aside from this project, man, when did it really evolve where you made this like a full-time profession for you?
Well, growing up, my brother was just a music junkie, and his big group at the time was Earth, Wind & Fire. So he just shared a love, for music, and he was really up on a lot of obscure acts like Return to Forever, and if that was a group that was had Chick Corea. Let me see if you can name some of the musicians in there. Come on, give me a couple.
Oh man.
I don't know.
I know Chick Corea. Definitely know Chick Corea, but I don't know
Chick Corea, Marcus Miller, I believe, a couple other people. So he put me on groups like that. He put me on to just really obscure music like Jaco Pastorius and just different people. And so one day I remember going through his collection of tapes that he had, and I saw this cassette. And I remember thinking at the time, Mike, this is a really corny looking album cover. And it was Babyface's first album, solo album. and it was Lovers. But I don't know a lot of people know about this album cover, because the new one, or the one that you see now, is not the same one. But it was sitting in front of a bunch of balloons. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to put this in and see what this sounds like. And I remember hearing the music, I was like, I want to work with this guy one day. Right. I'm going to work with this guy, Babyface. This is before Babyface was Babyface.
Right.
He was just, you know, some artist that had, you know, a shot without his music. And I just, you know, worked with different friends, you know, never really owned any equipment. And would go, you know, over their houses, write with them, do tracks, and keep all these cassettes, you know, around and everything. And so that night when we went to Larry Parker's, I ended up meeting him there and talking to him, telling him, like, oh, man, I'm really a big fan. You know, it's really great meeting you. I would love, you know, someday to sit down and talk with you and everything. And so his brother-in-law, again, got my information. And so I went to meet with him. Babyface wasn't there. When I went to meet with him, I just played him a bunch of tracks. He said, these are just tracks. These are not songs. I said, oh, yeah, well, I have some ideas written down. And so I started singing the ideas. You know, well, the music was really loud. So I was singing the ideas out. And he was like, man, you can really sing. You sound like Johnny Gill. I think it's when the music was up, you know, and I was, you know, kind of yelling. And so he told Kenny, he was like, yeah, this guy, he can't, all, you know, he, not only can he write and produce, but, you know, he can sing too. Right. So, you know, Faith called me. And I just remember that day. That was just a really special day. And I mean, the rest is history. But I remember, you know, I've had people along the way during that process, you know, kind of tell me what, you know, about publishing and music production and those different things. And so when I met him, though, he really showed me the craft of what a great song was and what great production was. And so, I mean, the rest is history. Just being around, you know, man, you can't help but grow.
Right.
And get better at your craft.
Oh, definitely, man. You know, I talked to a lot of guys, man. You know, it's one thing to really come in, really evolve into yourself as a musician, but now, man, just having that opportunity to work around other seasoned veterans that's been in the game for a while.
Yeah, it's a lot of information. A lot of information. A lot of good information, too.
Right. Now, I got to ask you, John, as a keyboardist, man, I mean, there's the evolution of keyboards has changed, man, in the last 10 years. I mean, we're coming from hardware synths and now merging into the software synths, man. I mean, what do you have in your rig now? Is it a combination of both, or are you strictly soft synth now?
I used to work with I had a Pro Tools TDM rig back in 2000, and a friend of mine by the name of Ian Boxhill, who's worked with Prince, John B, a lot of different artists, great mix engineer. He told me, Sassy, you have Logic in your, on your computer. I said, yes. God gave it to me, kind of threw it in with, you know, when I, you know, bought Pro Tools. He said, man, you should check it out. I was like, man, for what? I got Pro Tools and the MPC. I don't need to take it. I said, all right, cool.
Yeah.
So, about a month later, he came back by. He's like, man, I want to show you something. So he took me to this website. He says, you know, the program that you got in your computer Logic, they're coming out with this new soft synth called EXS24. I was like, what's a soft synth? He says, well, it's, you know, same thing that a, you know, regular synthesizer is, but they take the brains of it and just put it straight in the computer. You know, I guess that was the best way, you know, to explain it to me at the time.
Yeah.
And so he says, not only can you use it, but you can take all your samples out of the MPC and put them on a computer, and the EXS24 play it. I was like, hold up a second. So you mean to tell me that I could take all of my samples out, take them all from my MPC, store them in my computer hard drive, and have instant access to all of those sounds instantaneously? He's like, that's it. He's like, I'm sold. So from there, I kind of saw that the curve was changing. I saw that, okay, it's getting away from a lot of these synthesizers that you have to buy the cards for and do all these different things, and it's switching to soft synth. So I started little bit by little bit as I didn't need the the soft, you know, the synthesizers started selling them off. So now I'm completely laptop. All I have is a laptop with Logic on it, and that's how I create my music. Some people say, you know, it's good to have, you know, the best of both worlds, but my whole thing is it's either going to be live or, you know, working with the soft synths and, you know, Logic or whatever, you know, DAW that somebody might use. I mean, you know, the sounds are great. You have instant access. You pull it up. You don't have to write down on a pad like you used to, you know, what sound I use on this one, you know. So for me, I'm all strictly soft synths. I use Logic Pro, best DAW on the planet to me, in my opinion.
Oh, no doubt, man. We can actually back up, man, and go to the ESX24. You know, I've taken a step further where I've assigned all of my kicks, all of my snares, hi-hats, claps, etc., to its own virtual audio channel in the ESX24. So instead of having it coming out in stereo as stereo output 1 and 2, with the auxiliary inputs and auxiliary outputs in Logic, my kicks are on auxiliary 1 and my snares on auxiliary 2, so I have the full control of volume of each sound instead of just having it everything stereo, you know what I mean? So it just gives me that flexibility of getting to my sound, but when it comes down to really getting work done fast and efficiently and having control of every single sound that's going to the mix, you know what I mean? I'm real particular. It's like, man, I don't want my snares to have the same reverb hit as my kicks. You know what I mean?
No. You get a lot of these MPC guys that talk about the feel. I say, man, well, the MPC has that feel in it. And although, you know, the MPC does have that feel, I mean, technology nowadays, you can take and emulate feels from records, from drum machines. Now you can emulate those in Logic. So for me, it's to have it is necessary. I mean, now if you're a person that you like to have the pads and hit on the pads, that's great. You know, you get, you know, one of those little controllers to do that. But yeah. You, to me, in my, and this is my personal opinion, I feel out of all of the DAWs that are out of all of the different, you know, programs that people might use, I think Logic for a songwriter producer is the best DAW that you can have with all the plugins that they have. You know, being able to, like you said, but you do sign your kick, do multi outs, sign them to different channels.
Yes, Logic just gives me that analog feel, and in my ears, anyways.
You know what? This is the kind of analogy that I give to people versus Logic versus Pro Tools, the sound of the two. Logic definitely is a lot warmer. It has a bigger bottom end. Pro Tools is very bright, has a very bright top end, but it's kind of like basically SSL versus a Neve. You know, some people prefer SSL, some people prefer Neve consoles. Neither one is bad, you know, right. But the SSL became the industry standard. But if you took a layman off the street and said, hey, what console was this record recorded on, most people wouldn't be able to tell you. So really, at the end of the day, it's really all about the person using the equipment or the software.
Oh, so it's all about the driver, man. Now, your approach to compositions, John, man, do you have a production writing team that you work with, other producers, or is this pretty much a one-man camp at this point?
At this point, I have a crew of people. We call ourselves the Graduates. I'm by the name of Jack Spade, Kay Jackson, who's also an artist on a newly formed label that I have by the name of Boxcar Digital, and another writer-producer by the name of Captain Hook.
Okay. Nice.
And all of them are bad boys. They nice with it.
Wow. Now, that's hot, man. I talked to a lot of guys that, you know, especially if you're starting out or maybe as a seasoned producer, man, it's kind of nice just to switch it up a little bit and, you know, branch out and, you know, see some of the other talent that you might be able to mentor and also be able to learn from at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As artists, man, we just got to constantly evolve. You know, sometimes it's real easy for us to kind of get set in our ways of, you know, composing, arranging music and no, it's got to be this way. But, you know, someone might have just a little bit of flavor that you might be able to add to your own palette, you know? So, yeah, I'm definitely for the team there, definitely.
I love collaborations because I think the thing when you're dealing with a collaboration is when you're by yourself, you get in your own world and it's a certain way, and sometimes you get tunnel vision. When you have somebody else there, they kind of bring in things that you might not have thought of and say, I wouldn't have done that, but man, I kind of like that. So, for me, having a team of writers is always best, because you come up with the best work. My experience as a producer-songwriter, I'm kind of able to guide it, in the way that it should go. But there's no saying, well, that sucks. That's not how. It's all, being creative, letting the creative juices flow. And then from there, my experience as a producer, I'm able to kind of hone in on that and say, okay, well, I think we should use this and not that. That sound out and use this sound instead, because it creates a better color, against this sound. But yeah, I'm all for collabs, man. All for it.
Right. Over the past years, John, I've kind of gotten into my own ways of composition. It's nothing new that probably a lot of guys aren't doing, but it just really helps me see the full spectrum of the song. I love building my compositions around pre-recorded vocals. I might record with an artist from a past session. And usually when they leave the studio, man, that's when I strip all the music down, from the skeleton track that we just recorded to. And I love building my compositions around the vocals, the harmonies, just the over feel, because at that point, man, I'm able to shape and mold, where the song can go. A lot of times, man, we'll give an artist a song and, they're flowing with it. It's a good song, but does it really fit that artist, man? So I just got a lot of luck of building my music around the vocals that we record in sessions. And when they come back, it's like, man, let me do that again. I'm just able to see the song that way. Just changes in, and vocals inspire me as a keyboardist to start doing different progressions and different drum arrangements and building the sounds around it, man. What's up? What kind of steps have you been using in the studio with your compositions?
I kind of work the same way that you do. I like to create a frame, basically. I look at it as a song, as a house. So I like to put the basic frame down, but I don't like putting in the fixtures until we have a design. And I feel like the song is a design. We already know that we're going to use wood, or, you might use aluminum building the house. So I already know the certain sounds I'm going to use to start it as the base and the foundation. But once, like you said, once that artist comes in and they lay it down, depending on how, if they're a good singer or if they're an average singer, will determine, the type of production I put around it. Some artists you need to do overproduce it, because the reason why you have to overproduce it is because they're not a great singer. So you kind of have to detract attention away from the fact that they're not great singers. But when you have a singer that's incredible, then you don't have to put all the bells and whistles around it, because you want to make sure that the artist's tone, voice, and texture come through. So but I'm like you, I don't have a full house. I basically put a frame, let them do what they do, and then I just put it in as it needs it. I have a philosophy. I think that music is alive, and it tells you what it wants, how it wants it done, if you want to listen to it. And a product is never finished, or a song is never completed, because music changes every day. It's alive, but it'll let you know at a point where it's done. You can let that go now. But bring minds think alike, I think, man, and that's a lot of the good producers do it that way too. I don't think that they come with the whole track. I think that they do it in stages. I think it's backwards to take a completed track and say, hey, we'll write a song to this track. A lot of times you have a finished track, there's not a lot of different directions that you can take a melody. But when it's just simple, you can go all over the place melodically and do different things with it. So it yields to more creativity when it's in its basic form. Then you go back like you do yourself, and different chord progressions, you might change a different kick or add a different kick to it to bring out a different texture. So pretty much, like I said, I approach the same way that you do.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I say, sometimes, man, like you mentioned the kick, it's like, oh, why would I change the kick? And I was like, well, sometimes, man, the kick is cool without the vocals, but sometimes it might just hit so hard it's drowning out the vocals. And you don't want to EQ it because then it takes the punch out of it. So it's just best sometimes just to change the sounds that you're using for that artist, you know, especially if she's he or she has a softer voice, you know what I mean? So you definitely want to structure your sounds around the artist, man. No, I definitely agree with you there.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, like, when you have an artist like Michael Jackson, Michael Jackson is a very percussive singer, you know, so when he's singing up tempos, you don't want anything to detract from that percussiveness in his style. You want that to come out. So you use sounds that will enhance that, not take away from it. And, you know, that's why you might change a kick or a snare. You might use a little bit of a softer snare. Still hits, but not as hard.
Right. You know what, John, with all the artists that you work with under your belt, man, you have huge credentials. You know, who would you like to work with that you haven't already worked with already? You can be a new artist or an old artist.
Man. Oh, man, no disrespect to this new generation of singers. But I have to say, I have to take it from different genres, man. Like, I would have loved to work with the Bee Gees.
Yes,
back
sir.
In the day, I would have loved to work with the Beatles. Just been in the room while they were creating. I've gotten to work with so many different types of artists. Let me say, one of my favorite artists of all time, you know, to work with, I have to say, was Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Joe is, he's a surgeon vocally. Baddest vocalist I've ever heard in my life in a session. Wow. Hands down.
I agree, man. He's just unstoppable. No matter what song he gets on, it could be a remake. He just makes it his own.
Yeah, he is, man. He is a surgeon. Like, he doesn't need auto-tune.
No.
Doesn't need it. He is pitch perfect when he sings.
Oh, yeah. No, Joe's a type of artist, man. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I remember we were doing a session, working on the song. We finished the song in about an hour and a half, couple of hours. And I was just like, man, I don't feel right. I mean, that was too easy, man. That's just to give me something else to mess around with. Let's go back and sing a little bit more for me.
Right.
I wanted to get more takes from him because it just, he was just so amazing. You know what? Let me retract that. Although Joe is one of the best vocalists, there was a guy by the name of Warren Wiebe. He was an artist of David Foster. There was this group that they had. The name of the group is not coming to memory right now, but Warren Wiebe was the singer, and he was an autistic gentleman. And so when the group came in there, and they said, oh, yeah, he's one of the singers in the group. He had a receding hairline, and I'm thinking to myself, why is this guy in a group? And so I said, I'm gonna be right back, guys. I'm just gonna get me something to drink. So I, you know, left the control room, went to go get a bottle of water, came back in, and I heard Stevie Wonder singing. And I was like, man, you guys surprised you brought Stevie in here singing? Wow, man, thanks, guys. I was like, no, that's Warren singing. Warren who? Warren Wiebe. And I'm looking at this big, you know, he's not big fat guy, but he's kind of out of shape, big tall guy.
Right.
Receding hairline, singing and sounding exactly like Stevie Wonder. Now, this guy, he was so amazing that, you know, he sang the song down perfect, but that you said, okay, hey, I like what you did, but I want you to do something with the, and give me a little something at the end. I want to draw that note out just a little bit longer. He would do exactly what you asked to do, and then he could do whatever he wanted to do. He was autistic, but when all of his gifts, all of his personality came out when he sang.
Wow!
And for those of you who are listening, just Google Warren Wiebe on YouTube. He's one of the most amazing singers I've ever heard. He ended up committing suicide not too long ago, but amazing singer.
Wow. Man, I can imagine, man. There's just a lot of talent, man, a lot of gifts out there, you know what I mean? And some guys just really know how to channel it, and it just nurture it and just let it grow and blossom, man. I mean, that's what's up.
Yeah, he was Rain Man. Musically, he was Rain Man.
Wow.
Wow. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
Man. You know, speaking of the industry, man, I mean, you were at a point where things were a lot of A&Rs, record labels really had a certain structure, the way of their promotions and marketing. You know, with the internet and the technology taking over, man, I mean, what are some of the steps that you're using that's been successful for you to brand yourself as a producer and musician and really building that fan base where people can really get a hold of your projects?
Well, first let me say this. I think a lot of people are scared and saying that the industry is, you know, in a bad point. But I think it's probably at one of its better points because, you know, it's changing. And now the little man who couldn't get his foot in the door is now not only getting his foot in his door, but he's getting his voice heard and he's making money now. And the internet allows for that guy that will go on there and work his social networking on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, not so much MySpace anymore, but go on there, meet fans, do shows, post his shows. So now their voice is getting heard. And so it's basically leveling the playing field, so to speak, if you're able to market and promote yourself. Now, we all know that it costs money to propel, you know, a career.
Yeah,
but you know, it's an even playing field now because, you know, for an artist, if he sells it out of his trunk or on the internet, and they go to the site and sell it. If he sells 2,000 albums, he's made $20,000. If he's selling it at $10 a pop,
yeah,
you know, I don't know any artist that makes $20,000 selling gold.
That's right.
In today's industry, you know, it's, and so industry to look at the way that they do some things, and change the way that they do some things. It's reminding me of, and I wasn't in the industry nor even alive at that time, but it reminds you of the Motown era where, you know, there's so many different styles of music out there. And so many different groups doing the same style of music. And so it takes promotion for the talented ones to stick out. You know, so I'm for the internet. I'm for, you know, YouTube and these things because it takes the control of the industry away some. Because, you know, they're taking so much money from these artists. I mean, now you got these 360 deals. You know, yeah. Where they're taking a piece of everything. You know, so yeah. Artists that are talented now have a voice where they can say, "Well, you know, I don't want to do that." And now the record industry, you know, record labels or execs are coming to the artists now and saying, "Hey, we want to sign you." But now they have leverage now.
Yeah,
they, but before they didn't have necessarily a choice to say, "Well, nah, you know, I'll take the deal and I'll sign it." You know, you hear these stories of TLC where they're broke. But the album went 10 times platinum. Now you're in these artists saying, "Well, I don't want to do that deal. I don't like it.
Right.
You That's know, right. I want this in my deal." Because they're making money off of what they're doing. It, you know, so I love this industry and the way that it is now. And I think that it's going to grow and become more beneficial, especially as the model begins to form on, you know, how things are going to work now that the physical CD has kind of phased itself out and now it's just digital.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's just,
totally,
you know, good. I think it's good.
It is good, man. You know, like I say, it gives guys an opportunity and it's in a platform. And it's like, man, you guys are able to create your own platform, build your own fans. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
Take advantage of these tools, man. There's no excuse now that we can't get our material out there anymore. You know what I mean? I shouldn't see you begging for a record deal. I shouldn't see you, you know, it's like, "Oh man, I wish I had this." It's like, man, if you got an internet, you have a computer, you have a studio, let's get it popping. You know?
There's no excuse now. There's no excuse now. Like an artist like Tyler the Creator wouldn't have been able to exist 10 years ago. But now, because of the internet, he can. Because it's like, if the industry doesn't want to push him, he's like, I don't need you guys.
Right.
I got YouTube. I can, you know, post my own material. I can post my own content, and people will come and look at it. And he's showing that people are liking it.
Yeah, totally. So what's on the musical agenda for 2011, John?
Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I have a newly formed label by the name of Boxcar Digital. And so we have an artist by the name of Kay Jackson, who was formerly in a group called Third Story, and then did some acting on That's So Raven and was a regular on Everybody Hates Chris. In fact, he was the character Jerome. Hey, little dude from across the street, I mean, on the dollar.
Yeah.
That was his character. And so he's a seasoned artist, but he was in the group, you know, a singing group, but his talent was, you know, being an MC. And one day I heard him, you know, but he also was an excellent writer, exceptional writer. So I heard some of his, you know, music that he wrote and some of the verses that he did. I was like, yo, man, you know what we should do? We should, you know, do some music on you.
Right.
And see, you know, see what happens. See if we can go get you a deal. Well, you know, industry has changed so much. So I say, well, you know what? Man, I'm gonna create a label and I'm gonna put you out, and let's do it that way. And so we've been working. We've been pushing and promoting this project, and from it, I've been learning, you know, other ends of the industry as far as on the business end of it. You know, sometimes it's not about whether or not the album's great. You know, sometimes it's about fitting certain markability place in, you know, the industry. So, you know, you learn all of these different things. So now I have to wear, you know, different hats. So that's really what I've been focusing on, trying to find new talent and really getting this label off the ground and getting, you know, Kay Jackson off the ground. Wow. And if anybody wants to check him out on Twitter, his Twitter is at KJackson82. And his Facebook is www.facebook.com. I'm K Jackson. And you go to his website at www.imkjackson.com and check this guy out.
Nice. Well, John, it's been a pleasure having you on my show, man. Would love to have you back. Talk about your new musical endeavors and talk about your K Jackson project. Man, that's just popping. You got to come back.
Yeah, man. I would love to come back. Love. If you guys have me, I'll come back.
Oh, you already got a spot here at the Producer's Corner, man. You already know.
All right, bro.
Well, John, you have a safe 2011, man. Best of luck to you, your label, and your family, man.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Spud. Man, been a pleasure.
All right, man. You have a safe one.
You too.
Peace. And a big shout out to John for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. John's a real talented songwriter and producer, man. He's worked with a lot of artists, has a lot of experience, knows what he wants to do in the studio, and, you know, he works with a lot of talented individuals under his camp as well. And he just really keeps his mind open to the full spectrum of the project, man. You know, that's one of the things that stood out to me in the interview, man. He was really focused on the overall project and the sound of the record. For more information on John, you can hit him up on Twitter, twitter.com/JohnJohn2, twitter.com/JohnJohn2, and that's JohnJohn, the number 2. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spud2tight.com, www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so give a Mac, PC, an iPod, an iPhone, open up the iTunes store, type in the Producer's Corner with Spud 2 Tight, click on the image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.